Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com.
Joining us now is one of the best ever, Ernie Accorsi. Ernie, welcome back to the show. It's great to hear you again.
Steve, it's my pleasure. I always enjoyed being on with you.
There's different ways to construct the team. And when you look at Kansas City and Philadelphia, wide receivers were part of how the teams were constructed. Kansas City dealt away Tyreek Hill, and Philadelphia acquired A.J. Brown. When you look at the construction of the two teams from that GM seat, how masterful were each of these guys to help get their teams there?
Well, I look at it that way as much as anything. I'll start with Philadelphia. Howie Roseman has just done a remarkable job. I mean, you know, it's very rare to see a general manager build two different teams 4 or 5 years apart and take them both to the Super Bowl. And he reconstructed this almost entire team. And I loved his move up to get the receiver from Alabama in the draft. He's made moves to make the team stronger by picking up Brown. He's got three running backs, and they're all interchangeable. He had faith in the quarterback. I mean, they've drafted well, and they've traded and signed real well. From the Chiefs' standpoint, they've just drafted. You know, they're kind of like Pittsburgh in that they've lost players, and they draft and fill the holes. I mean, They're middle of the draft drafts. It's 2, 3, 5, or 6 have been remarkably successful. When I sit here and watch games on Sunday, I have an NFL manual with me, and it has rosters with numbers. And I don't know the players like I used to, but I see players making plays. And this happened with Kevin Colbert in Pittsburgh, too, and it's happening with Kansas City all the time. And I don't know who they are, and I'll look it up. It's always fourth-round pick, fifth-round pick, third-round pick. And, I mean, they have just drafted so well. And that Andy Reid's had enough of time to do that. And I'm sure he's got tremendous support from his scouts and the general manager, who I don't know. But they're just two models. I mean, if football was business, I would tell young people, study those two clubs, like going to the Harvard Business School. I mean, and like you said, there are different ways to do it. They're slightly different in the way they did it. But they both have two what I thought are the most important ingredients in building a team. Number one, the quarterback, and number two, the pass rush. When you have that, now you can compete. Now you have to fill in. But I saw something the other day. The Eagles have 68 sacks. 70% of them were without blitzing.
Right.
If you can do that, that just opens everything up in the back seven. If you can rush the passer without blitzing, so they're just two model organizations that have done just the marvelous jobs.
Yeah, and it's remarkable. You talk about Kansas City, like rounds, you know, 4 through 7, and the guys they pick up. They had 22 available players on defense for the Cincinnati game. 8 of the 22 were rookies, Ernie. To again go to your point.
They've both picked up players here and there, particularly Philadelphia, but that's your lifeblood. Don't give those choices away, because I've been in the draft room where maybe I traded a fourth or a third, and it doesn't seem like much when you make deal for a player, a live player, who's coming in to contribute. But on draft day, when you're sitting there on the board, and you know you love everybody that's left, And you've scouted all these people, and our scouts have certain players they really like. And now all of a sudden you have a hole in your draft, and there's somebody there you really like, and you can't pick them. And that's why you just have to constantly preserve your draft choices and scout heavily and make those choices count. That second and third day drafting is so crucial to building a championship team.
Right. So I'll do a devil's advocate moment here. And that's Joe Paterno's style. When Joe would talk to the staff and somebody wanted to do something, he would deliberately counter the point because he wanted to see what their conviction was about it. Did you try to find out as often as you could the conviction a scout had about a player?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, scouts go out, and they're area scouts, and then you have cross-checkers. But right. They go out, can grade the players they've seen. Now, those players, you know, they're going to rate their players, and you're going to put your board together by position, not regardless of position. That's a different board, but by position on their grades. Okay, so if you have a scout and you respect him, and he's got a guard or an inside linebacker, and they're important, but if he has them rated as the best player he's seen, you have to be careful because you're the team builder. They aren't. They haven't seen everybody. And I learned a long, long time ago that you've got to look, you can't have an all-pro team. You've got to have your best players at the right positions. And I've learned that back in the mid-70s when we played the Patriots. Steve, they had 7 players in the league, on their team, the Patriots. They were the best players in the league at their position. I mean, Sam Hunt, John Hanna, I could name them all. But we had Burke Jones, we had Roger Carr, we had Lydell Mitchell, and we had the sack pack with 160 sacks in 3 years. They didn't. They had a blitz, and they played a 34th defense, and we beat them all 3 years for the divisional title. And what I learned there was you better have your best players at the key positions. So although the scout may have the guard is the best player at his position, if I've got a defensive end like O.C. Uniminior or Tuck that are on the board, I'm taking the defensive end. So that's the difference between the guy who's wearing the hat and the guy who's not wearing the hat. I mean, I respected their ratings, but when it comes to deep building, it's you and the head coach that have to make that decision.
Yeah, and those Colts teams that you're talking about that had a great run, you know, you may not have had the best 7 players, but you had at the positions that you needed them, you had the better players. And New England played the 3-4.
I could tell you that the back 7, I don't think could have played. I don't think we had a back 7 that could have started on their defense.
Right.
But we had the sack pack. And, you know, they 160 sacks in 3 years. You know, they dominated the division. But, no, there's no question. But to your point about Paterno, he was great at Challenge Union, no matter what job you had. I mean, I was the assistant PR director, and I had to put the Orange Bowl brochure together for the 69 team. And, you know, he gave me 30 minutes, 45 minutes to get quotes on every player.
Yep.
And I sat in there, and you know, I started in alphabetical order. Aaron Hold, I'm sorry. And about the third player, he said, wait a minute. You're not prepared. He said, I'm not going to do this for you. Ask me the questions that are going to extract the quotes. Come back in about 3 hours when you're prepared. So, you know, I left there with my tail between my legs, but I learned a lesson. Yeah. But that's what he would do. He would challenge you. But it only did – all that do it was make you better. And he would do the same with his coaches. I mean, I heard you know, he would yell at assistant coach – you know, we'd have a scrimmage on a Saturday. He'd say, you know, coach during the week, let him play on Saturdays. And, I mean, he always challenged the staff. So that was the leadership in him.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Believe me, I've talked to enough guys or have seen it myself where he'll challenge them, but he may agree with them, but he wants to make sure that they've got the conviction behind it. And that's what he was looking for. What is your conviction behind what you're telling me? Is there a difference when you're sitting in that chair as a season goes because you're in contention versus a team that is not in contention? And, of course, I'm thinking about how Philadelphia added as the season went along when they had needs.
Yes. Well, you mean if you're making a run at it?
Yeah, you're making a run at it.
If you have to be careful, and this is more of an off-season concept, you have to be careful of the "we're one player away" concept. You can get into trouble with that, especially if you're going to be giving away a high pick. But if you can get somebody, especially if you happen to have maybe an extra fifth or an extra fourth or sixth, I mean, if you can get somebody like Brown when they picked him up, then right. That can make a big difference. You better go get them. And you know that might be the difference in your team. Now, it doesn't happen often in football as much as it does in baseball. You pick up an RBI guy and he comes in and has a great September or August, September, but because they're not usually available in football. But when you can do that, yeah. If you have that opportunity, jump on it. And that's what Howie's done. He's just done a remarkable job. I mean, between Super Bowls, he in the media's eyes, he was on the hot seat. They were all over
him. That's right.
And he just plunged on and kept doing his work. And I'm really proud of him. He's a good friend, and I couldn't be happier for him.
It's interesting because we are in an era fantasy football, as you well know. Now, you sit in that chair, and you know how hard this job is. I always tell young people in my class, be curious, not critical. Okay? Be curious, not critical. I feel like fantasy football, everybody thinks they can do that job, Ernie. Oh, look, I built my fantasy team. I can build the Eagles.
I know they can't get fired. that's the first thing. but there are a couple of elements to that job which make it harder, I think, than baseball. Baseball's become a general manager's sport. Well, always was, because there was so much more training. But now at this point, where they're giving scripts to how the manager uses the pitchers, there's no job that has more pressure in sports with less control than a general manager. You can't go down to the coach's booth. I mean, I guess you can, but I never did. Go down to the coach's booth and tell them, will you change your coverage? I mean, the coaches will throw you out of there. I mean, they're under such intense pressure play-by-play. Can you imagine going to the Paterno's booth and telling him what to do if you were the AD? I mean, and the thing is that you sit there and suffer. And, look, things are going to happen that you don't agree with, and there's not a thing you can do about it. It's totally different because there are certain look, you're going to make mistakes, and I mean this in a baseball vernacular. There are no 400 hitters in our jobs. I mean, by that, I don't mean you got to be better than 40%, but I mean 400 hitters. Ted Williams hitting 406.
Right.
But you're going to have to take risks. You're going to have to gamble, and you're going to make mistakes. You cannot make a mistake high in the first round on a quarterback. If you do that, it's setting you back 3 to 5 years. Because, look, you can go from Marino was an exception, but you can go to Aikman 1-13, Elway, who they had a bench twice during his rookie year. I mean, yep. Right down the list that of all the great quarterbacks, Plunkett that were picked high, that Burke Jones, who struggled for 2 years, we had to bench him. So you have to stay with them. You can't quit on them. So that's 2 years now. If you've blown that pick, you've just wasted 2 years. Now you're going to give them another year or two. That's 4 years. And now you got to start all over again. Those are the mistakes that cripple you that is so difficult to recover from. But you're going to make mistakes down through the draft. And you're even going to make a mistake in the first round that you can recover from. But the quarterback, that's going to be a damaging error.
Right, yeah, because the last time you already you talked about draft day with Eli Manning and so forth, that which was a fascinating story. So, in other words, you're saying that you never went down and you told Ted Marchibrodo or Tom Coughlin what the lineup should be that day?
No, I never did, but I have to admit one thing, though.
Yeah.
We were playing the Jets, and it was Frank Cush, it wasn't Ted Marchibrodo, who I inherited. And they had a Olympic gold medalist named Johnny Lamb Jones from
Texas. Oh, I remember. He's out of Texas.
Yeah. Right. Now, he didn't have a great NFL career. But we were a little crippled in the secondary, and we had a slow safety, had to play corner that day. And I looked out on the field, and Todd was their quarterback. And we had this slow safety playing man defense on Johnny Lamb Jones. Now, if I'm throwing the ball, it's a touchdown, okay? So we got to – I thought Richard Todd was going to snap his neck because when he noticed it, his neck snapped, and he couldn't wait to get the snap and throw it, but he overthrew Lamb Jones.
All right.
I ran down to the booth, and I and these were the assistants. These weren't the head coaches. I said, can we put at least two people on the Olympic gold medalist down there? I said, because he's going to be 7 points in about 2 seconds. That's the only time I ever did it. And I got out of there. They were connected with him, you know, because he really didn't catch the ball that well. But nobody was going to cover him, let alone the guy we had on him. I won't mention his name. But there was no way in the world he was going to cover Johnny Langenfeld. That's the only time I walked down there. I never went down there any other time. I certainly wasn't going to ever do it with Tom Coughlin. I can tell you that.
No. No. Ernie, I just love just talking with you. So thanks so much for doing this.
Anytime, Steve.
These aren't interviews, they're just talks. I appreciate it so much.
I love Penn State, you know that. I went to Wake Forest, but that time I spent up there, I had lunch with Louise and Louise Tarman and Sue Paterno this past summer, and I said, you know, it's amazing. I wasn't there a very long time, but it connected me for life, and I live and die with them every week. Of course, I'm a native Pennsylvanian, but I love Penn State, so I'd do anything for the Nittany Lions.
Yeah, we appreciate you so much. And, of course, I know that Barry Jones was with you for the time period of time you were here, if I remember.
Yes, well, he was my intern when I was at Penn State, and then I took him to Baltimore. He's a wonderful guy. God, he
sure is.
Yeah.
Ernie, thanks so much. Appreciate your time today. Thanks,
Anytime.
My friend.
Okay.
You bet.